Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the State House Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of January 21st, 2020. This week, as we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we look at the importance and history of the King Day at the Dome event in Columbia. Free Times reporter Chris Traynor's cover story on the event at the State House, now in its 20th year, traces the roots of the event to protests around the Confederate battle flag to becoming a must-stop for Democratic presidential hopefuls. Interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at SCLeadPod. We always want to hear from you, so holler at us with any of your thoughts. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. And make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including NPR One. You can listen to all four sections of our podcast while you wonder why the new U.S. Space Force uniforms are camouflage. Are there trees in space? Or while you try to find the best place to go to the bathroom when you're at Machu Picchu. Spoiler alert, not the Temple of the Sun, at a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Go to the front entrance, guys. We looked it up. There is a bathroom at the front entrance. And if you're listening to us in Machu Picchu, slap a lead sticker right there. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Post and Courier reports that South Carolina intends to spring forward an hour and not fall back under a bill heading to Governor Henry McMaster's desk. But to stay in daylight saving time would require an act of Congress. The House gave final approval to a bill establishing what South Carolina would do if Congress allows states to ignore the twice-a-year time change. Governor McMaster said he will sign the bill. Number two, the Associated Press reports that the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, the group that awards accreditation to the University of South Carolina, has determined that Governor Henry McMaster had undue influence on last year's search for a new president. The university will now have to submit a report and be visited by a special committee from the accreditation group. The organization opened an investigation into the university after the tumultuous hiring of new president Bob Caslin, who's a retired Army general who was the superintendent of West Point for 5 years. Number three, the Associated Press reports that a Senate subcommittee approved a bill that prevents state and local governments from issuing permits to build onshore infrastructure that would be needed for offshore drilling, making it impractical to drill even if the federal government allows it. The Senate passed a similar ban in 2019 in the budget, but that was temporary. A number of Republicans are behind the proposal, even though President Donald Trump supports offshore drilling. It now heads to the full Senate Agriculture Committee. Number four, the state newspaper reports that the state's only publicly funded, historically black technical college is facing fresh scrutiny after lawmakers learned that $500,000 the state gave to the school to buy equipment was instead improperly spent on payroll. At the same time, lawmakers challenged Denmark Technical College's new president, Willie Todd, to help come up with a plan to turn around the cash-strapped school, which has been on probation since December. Now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline: Florida man facing DUI arrest offers deputies free MMA class if they let him go. 40 seconds, McGregor, cowboy. And just like all of our hopes and dreams that Brad and Jen would get back together at the SAG Awards, we buried the lead. All respect to our Royals. Those are our Royals, people. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, a lead head as we say sometimes, you may have heard us reference King Day at the Dome when talking about presidential politics. The event, which falls on Dr. Martin Luther King Day, is a major part of the campaign trail during recent Democratic presidential campaigns, including Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards in 2008, Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Martin O'Malley in 2016, and Cory Booker and Sanders in 2019. And now this year with Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Tom Steyer, and Tulsi Gabbard. But how this came to be a de facto South Carolina campaign stop over its 20 years is maybe not so well known. Chris Traynor, a reporter with the Columbia Free Times, recently had a cover story about King Day at the Dome and is in studio with us today to discuss it. Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, Chris.
Gavin, thank you for having me. Finally, I've felt so shunned for so long.
You brought me in
from the cold, though. You finally brought me in from the, a lowly alt-weekly writer.
It was not intentional.
Yeah.
Speaking of the cold, we'll be out there on Monday, and I want to let you know that we're taping this on Friday before King Day at the Dome, since we'll both be out there on Monday.
Yep.
And so we're not going to be recapping any speeches from these candidates, obviously. We'll have that on a substantial Trail Bite this Thursday, and also we'll have a good piece on This Week in South Carolina Friday at 7:30 p.m. on ETV. So check all that out then. But for this episode of The Lead, we're going to just kind of talk about your cover story, Chris. Mm. And they say the road to the White House goes through South Carolina. I know everyone loves saying that. But it also goes through Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada. Yes. But hey, we're in South Carolina. Let's play to our people here. And that being said, one of those big stops in the state is King Day at the Dome. Mm. And Chris, give me an overview about just this event, how it started, and how it became what it is today.
Yeah, definitely. This is the 20th anniversary of King Day at the Dome. 2000 was the first one, and it's lived on in sort of different iterations in the two decades since. But really, the original focus of the 2000 King Day at the Dome was at the time an effort to try to get the Confederate flag off the top of the State House. Mm-hmm. So back in 2000, a number of groups and individuals and entities, to include J.T. McLaughlin or the Urban League, various churches, the NAACP had, South Carolina branch, NAACP had a hand, a number of entities, both African-American and white, came together to really want to apply pressure to bring the Confederate flag off the top of the State House Dome on Gervais Street there. So they launched this rally, and word about it spread. It became more than just a rally. Some say it was the largest single peaceful protest in the history of South Carolina. Some 60,000 people attended. I don't know if you've ever seen photos from the event, but it takes the crowd that was at last year's teacher rally and dwarfs the look of it. And that was a huge rally. Just people spilling in front of the State House, up Gervais, down Main Street, just a sea of people who came on King Day to celebrate Dr. King's legacy, but also use it as a springboard to get the Confederate flag off the top of the State House Dome.
And which it did. I mean, eventually that year, 2000, right?
It moved off the top.
But then, of course, it moved down to the monument right there up front, too, where it remained until 2015, unfortunately.
Some would say a more prominent space in terms of visibility to the public. Mm-hmm. But of course, in 2015, as we all know, after a tragedy in Charleston with the Dylann Roof, Emmanuel Amy situation, they finally removed it completely from those grounds.
Which also had a huge, massive turnout, too. I remember being there for that. And I'm guessing, it's still not in comparison to the 2000 turnout, but I mean.
No, but it would be in that same vein, but was not in comparison to that. I was there that day as well when that flag came down from the in front of the State House, and remember the law enforcement snipers on rooftops and kind of an intense scene that day, but ultimately peaceful when that flag came down. But yes, that's how King Day at the Dome started, was as a protest to the Confederate flag. In the years since, the NAACP, the state conference of the NAACP, has specifically taken it on as an event to further Dr. King's legacy. And of course, if we're here to talk about today, at some point it becomes a political powerhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're tracing it back to 2008, really, when you're looking at Obama and Clinton and Edwards being there. Is that when we really kind of start seeing it become this real big de facto stop on the campaign trail for these guys?
I think so. I think that it did. And that was probably a special scenario that year where then-Senator Obama is a part of it. Of course, Secretary Clinton and John Edwards as well, both with political might in their own right. But if you remember, as I do, in 2008, then-Senator Obama, he was political lightning. Mm-hmm. And so if he would go somewhere, it would bring a lot of hype behind an event. And that happened at King Day at the Dome. And I think that sort of opened people's eyes to how powerful it can be in South Carolina as a springboard to perhaps the White House.
And when we look at that event, too, I mean, like we're talking about off years, too, when we're talking about the SC, South Carolina NAACP having their event there. Not every year it's this big blowout like it is with these candidates, but it is still to celebrate Dr. King's legacy.
Yeah.
And it's also just an important time to really get ahead of, a lot of voters during these election years and get these, leading up to election years. Like we saw Cory Booker there, Senators Cory Booker and Bernie Sanders there last year. And it was pretty obvious what was going on there because a couple of days after that, we saw Cory Booker launch his bid, and he used video from King Day at the Dome in his advertisement. So, and now he's no longer in the race. So it's interesting because we would probably have seen him here at this event, too.
Sure. Just days short of being here, he suspended his campaign. But yes, Steve, and for this cover story, which you can still, it was out a couple weeks ago, but you can still catch it at free-times.com. Mayor Steve Benjamin, Columbia's third term mayor and first African-American mayor in the history of Columbia, told me just how important he thinks King Day at the Dome is for presidential candidates, specifically saying, and it's not in front of me, but basically, these are the most politically engaged, civically minded folks. They've taken their day off, they got a holiday, and yet they've come out in the cold in numbers, in thousands, to purposely be engaged. So if you have a chance in South Carolina, the first diverse state to have a primary in a cycle, to have some of the most civically minded folks together in one place, that it's incumbent upon candidates to be here if they're serious about South Carolina.
And we know Mayor Benjamin has since endorsed former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who is not doing the early states. He's focusing on Super Tuesday, so he wouldn't necessarily be here.
No.
But I'm wondering, when talking to him, did he say, like, it is kind of a fumble if you are a candidate not to come out to this? I know there's other commitments going on in Iowa on the same day, but it just seems, if you're not here on King Day at the Dome, are you taking South Carolina seriously?
He didn't go as far as to say it would be a fumble. And to be clear, just for posterity, he had already endorsed Bloomberg when I interviewed him, that being Mayor Benjamin, but talked freely under the understanding that that Mayor Bloomberg's not competing here. You know, he's focusing on Super Tuesday states. So I think Mayor Benjamin felt free to talk about that regardless of his endorsement of Mike Bloomberg. But while he didn't say it would be a fumble not to be here, he did just stress the importance of being here. I think he called it a command performance for folks to be here. I had others I spoke to within the story, former State Representative Bakari Sellers, who's a pundit with CNN, political consultant extraordinaire Antoine Seawright, who's a pundit for CBS and kind of a Democratic powerhouse behind the scenes here in Columbia. You know, they both intimated that it would be a mistake. If you're serious about the black vote and not just paying lip service, you should probably be here on MLK Day.
I'm just looking up your quotes, some quotes from Bakari in that story. It takes the candidates out of New Hampshire, takes them out of Iowa, takes them out of Nevada. They must be in South Carolina. They must be surrounded by black folks, says Sellers. The unique part about this is the first time we've seen such a pronounced disconnect with the top-tier candidates and black voters. And he was endorsing Senator Kamala Harris in the race. She's since dropped out. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. There is, unfortunately, another kind of big scheduling conflict with these early states with the Iowa Brown and Black Presidential Forum, which is an event where candidates can address concerns of African-American voters and Latino voters.
Yes.
But all the speakers, and it's interesting because the speakers who will be at King Day at the Dome will jet off to Des Moines that same day and appear. And it just kind of goes to show, like, again, you know, how money helps get in these situations. You can hop on a private jet and get to Des Moines in a couple hours and be in two places at once on the same day and get that message out to those Iowa voters who are critical. But again, when we're talking about really reaching out to people of color, black voters specifically, you know, South Carolina is that first state where you are going to have 60% of the electorate for the Democratic Party being African-American. And that's critical, and especially an event like this when we are going to be a month away from our primary.
You know, you look at South Carolina is the first state with that type of diversity as far as in the primary cycle. And it's a state that looks more like many of the states we'll see on Super Tuesday. So it's a real proving ground for candidates. You know, we see Vice President Biden coming. It's cliche at this point when many people say South Carolina is his firewall because he is so strong with and has been for many years with the African-American voters in this state. He's going to be here. Bernie Sanders, at the outset, a year ago, word circulated in our circles, you know, that Bernie was serious about South Carolina this time. Hillary Clinton just trounced him here in 2016. Whether he wins it or not, I do not know, but there's no doubt that Senator Sanders has proven to be more serious about South Carolina over the last year. And, you know, here he comes again for King Day at the Dome. So, yeah, it's definitely, as Bakari says in the piece, South Carolina is the ball game. It's Iowa is its own unique flavor. And I understand why folks want to be at the Brown and Black Forum. There's one of the longest running minority-focused forums in the country. So it's important to be there. But I think it's telling that, you know, certain candidates are not going to be here, you know, what that may say about how they feel about their chances in South Carolina.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting. We look at both those events because I researched this, found this out, that people of color will make up one-third of the 2020 electorate for the first time. So, like, again, events like this, events like the Brown and Black Forum in Iowa are going to be critical to getting that message out to people, especially such a key demographic of the Democratic Party.
No doubt.
As we get closer to 2020. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, you know, I mean, you're looking at these top tier candidates. You got your, you know, Joe Biden, who's just had a lock on South Carolina since day one. But then you have your Sanders and your Warren really kind of fighting between second, third place here.
And your top progressives.
Yeah, and we're talking about proportional delegates, you know, getting, you know, even if you come in second in South Carolina, you're still going to get some delegates, which comes down to, you know, helping the math overall. Mm. But then you have your Stiers, who, again, keeps trying to reach out more and more to the black community in South Carolina.
Sure.
And, you know, we saw this poll from Fox News that put him at 15%. You know, I don't know if that's people knowing who he is or if it's just him bombarding, you know, the airwaves, YouTube, mailers, billboards. I mean, it seems like that seems to be...
My daughter wants to vote for him. She's 11. But he stars videos, play in front of her little YouTube cartoons and things. She watches every video, every mm-hmm. video.
And you're not alone. Yeah, people, that's what people tell me all the time.
Like, you know, she recently told my father, her grandfather, he should vote for Steyer because Steyer's going to expose Trump for what he is, a fraud and a failure. Literally parroting his commercial.
Got some child campaign soldiers out
correct,
there.
Correct, she's got some. So Steyer's got one vote from an 11-year-old at Pleasant Hill Elementary School.
I mean, I'm sure there's many like that. But it's interesting because, you know, just talking about Steyer really briefly.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking about the overall. But we did see some data come out from the USC Media Insights Lab where they kind of, you know, take an ear and they delve through all the tweets and posts out there on social media and kind of get an idea about what people are talking about, cut through the noise a little bit.
Yeah.
And this quote from Caitlin Park saying, while advertising dollars can generate name recognition, we are not seeing organic adoption of either Tom Steyer or Mike Bloomberg on social media. Mm. There simply isn't the buzz among social media users. So, yes, right. Again, like we're seeing that, you know, I've heard that name. I know that name. Yes, I'll say that name. But to compare it to the other candidates in the field, it seems like it's not organically there like we're seeing with others.
Probably, by the way, Caitlin Park's queen bee. absolutely. She's one of the best. But
old friend of the pod, yeah.
Yeah, literally one of the best. But I can see that. I can see that. I mean, they're both, we're not seeing a lot of Bloomberg here in the Midlands because he didn't do a big media buy here. But, in, you know, I'm to understand with friends in North Carolina and elsewhere that what we're seeing with Steyer here on the airwaves, they're seeing with Bloomberg too, mm-hmm. and he's just pouring money into it. That's probably good insight from Caitlin in the lab, but we're about to get to the proving grounds, aren't we? I mean, mm-hmm. when the votes start coming in, the caucuses start, we'll see if it paid off for those two.
And we're seeing Steyer visit, too. Like, I'm not going to begrudge him for that. Like, he's having, you know,
he'll
events
be King
here.
Day.
And he's doing that stuff. But again, yeah, when you got the money, it helps. But then again, like, you know, we're saying, you know, King Day at the Dome, these events, these de facto stops in South Carolina, like Jim Clyburn's Fish Fry, mm-hmm. They're all big stops that all lead up to the big day, February 29th. So, Chris, thanks for giving us more information about just how important this event is and what goes into it. I know I'll see you out there on Monday.
Yeah.
You'll be wearing shorts.
Indeed,
it's always cold, even though if it's cold, it doesn't matter.
That's, I guess, somehow, I don't know how, somehow that became my calling card a little bit. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I'll be in shorts, God willing, and look forward to King Day at the Dome. It's always, A, it's great to see candidates and mm-hmm. such, but B, I mean, it's great to see the people of Columbia who show out, real Columbia, who show out for that every year. So I look forward to it.
Yep, and definitely reflecting on Dr. King's legacy there, too. So
sure.
Very interesting. Again, one of those events where, you know, that's what we're first. You have this opportunity to get there and see these candidates before they just become people on the TV. So
absolutely.
We'll be interesting to see that crowd then. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Hey, appreciate you having me.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Campaign trail. Molly Gibson.
Brown liquor.
Lee enough, WRHI reports that former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley will campaign for 5th Congressional District Representative Ralph Norman on March 2nd as he kicks off his re-election campaign at McBride Hall at Winthrop University. The state newspaper reports that Democratic Party leaders are celebrating after state election officials agreed to change rules to allow voter registration applicants to use only the last 4 digits of their Social Security number when applying to vote. South Carolina is one of 3 states that has required all 9 digits of a Social Security number for registration. The motion detailing that agreement was filed in the U.S. District Court in Columbia. The Post and Courier reports that John Kuhn, the chairman of Charleston County's Republican Party, abruptly resigned, creating a leadership gap at the center of the hotly contested 1st Congressional District. Kuhn's resignation came just minutes after he opened the party's first meeting of the year with a nearly 11-minute tirade. He outlined the reasons for his departure, and nearly all of it boiled down to internal squabbles. And the Post and Courier reported that Democrat Gloria Tinubu dropped out of South Carolina's 2020 U.S. Senate race, clearing the path for Jamie Harrison to become the party's nominee, targeting Republican U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham. Tinubu threw her support behind Harrison during a news conference at the State House. Harrison recently announced that he has raised over $3.5 million in the final 3 months of 2019, an amount that broke Graham's own record for the best fundraising quarter by a political candidate in South Carolina history. In our final section, Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, government, or politics. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here? He is. Russ, you're in studio.
Right here. Thanks.
What you got for us?
Well, a lot of talk about Martin Luther King, obviously, the Civil Rights era. It's easy to think about the anthem of the Civil Rights Movement. Of course, the anthem was, We Shall Overcome.
Yes, there's several anthems.
Kind of a no-brainer. A gospel song that became a protest song. But did you know that the modern version of We Shall Overcome was sung for the very first time in South Carolina?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So it was sung by, your choices are, A, marchers at the state's very first civil rights demonstration on New Year's Day in 1960 in Greenville. We've talked about that one before. B, by college students the following month in Rock Hill, demonstrating, trying to segregate a lunch counter. Of course, the Friendship Seven, that became a well-known group there at demonstrations in Rock Hill. C, by demonstrators in Charleston in 1963, also protesting segregated lunch counters. Mm. And D, by tobacco workers during a 1945 cigar worker strike in Charleston.
Yeah, geez.
We Shall Overcome was saying for the first time.
I mean, I'm already thinking of like Greenville and Rock Hill, but then you throw something like that and it's just interesting. So, yeah, give me this again, Russ.
Okay, A, Greenville, New Year's Day, 1960, the state's first recorded civil rights march. B, college students the next month, or later that month, actually, in Rock Hill, lunch counter. C, in Charleston, 1963, also lunch counter demonstrations. And D, tobacco workers back in 1945 in Charleston.
I kind of want to do B, you know, because it kind of followed after Greenville. So that's my logic right there, Rock Hill.
Well, the answer is D.
Had a feeling that.
Tobacco workers during a 1945 cigar worker strike at the American Tobacco Company plant on East Bay Street in Charleston.
Okay.
Labor stoppages in 1945, right after World War II, were kind of out because they were outlawed during the war. So this one got a lot of attention. But they took they transformed the traditional gospel song of "We Will Overcome" to "We Shall Overcome," and the first recorded use of that being sung at a demonstration in Charleston, 1945.
So right there at the cigar factory, right there on East Bay Street.
Huh.
Something to think about next time you're getting a drink there at Mercantile and Mash or something like that. Well, very interesting. Thank you, Russ.
Sure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Friday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 11:30 a.m. All that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's Super Easy to Use app and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, Spotify, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram at @SCLeadPod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Free Times. Our producer and adjunct mammalogy professor is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch and Tom Posey are our executive producers. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on January 20th, 2020. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message from Disney Plus. Bambi was in on it. Wake up.
Machu Picchu. You can put that at the end.